coming to you live from where the wild men are. I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is Milwaukee, it turns out. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode dozens, guard well yon nipply men, O squire mine.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast, the podcast all about alarms, from smoke alarms, to alarm clocks, to five alarm chili. All we do is alarms. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
What kind of alarms are we talking about today?
Bar alarms.
What are those?
They're alarms that tell you when somebody has reached across the bar to get themselves a pack of salted peanuts.
Aren't the salted peanuts for free there, just for anyone?
Yeah, but you're not supposed to reach across the bar and into, like, the bartender's space to get them.
Who would pay for such an alarm?
A bartender might.
It comes out of their bartender pay?
Yeah, like if they didn't want people to do that.
Not the bar owner, though, the bartender.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a rough gig.
Yeah. My friend, the inestimable Mr. Hart, once got banned from a bar for reaching over the bar to take stuff from behind it.
Was he trying to take cash or drinks?
I think he was trying to take napkins, as I recall.
Oh. They probably just were looking for literally any reason to ban him.
That could have been.
That would be my guess. Having met the inestimable... Inestimable?
Inestimable.
I left out at least one syllable. The inestimable Mr. Hart.
No, it's actually the indigestible.
You also cannot digestimate him.
Digestible?
Tom's using up the syllables that I forgot to use.
Indigestible. Dang it. Anyway. The point is that if you eat him, he's just going to sit there in your belly.
I mean, he'll pass eventually, nope. But he will not have been broken down in any way.
Yep. You're just going to have to pass an entire man. It's going to be rough. Don't do it. Don't eat it.
Don't do that.
Yeah, you don't want that.
He's covered from head to toe in...
barbs?
I was going to say just thick red hair, but...
he's like a tomato yeti.
Oh, that's. I was just going to say red Brillo pan. Tomato yeti.
That's just an Italian yeti? Is that how that works?
Sure.
We'll go with it. But we're glad to have you here. We're glad you came back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Welcome to any of my coworkers who decided to listen after somebody revealed my Wu-Tang secret today.
We, or you, or Tom, or any combination of those will probably live to regret it.
I'm sure. But we're glad to have you here nonetheless. And yeah, this is the podcast that we do.
What's the segment that we're doing?
The segment that we're doing is called Remaking the Game.
I don't think we have theme music for that.
Do you want me to do some with my mouth?
I really don't, but I also don't want to make any, so, you know, whatever. I have $100 for anyone who can write in and tell me what time signature that was in.
8:32.
Okay.
Not even a little bit, huh?
No.
8 was a number.
So was 32, as it turns out.
So Remaking the Game is a segment we do where we pick a classic game that maybe you're not so fond of as board game players, and we talk about how we might do it differently, were we to design it from the ground up, while keeping it still recognizably the same idea. We've done Monopoly before. We've done Risk. I think we did Cluedo, as the British call it.
They do, but we didn't.
Oh. And now today we're going to do Battleship.
Okay.
I'm going to try that again. We're going to do Battleship.
I'm not really sure what you're looking for,
like,
here.
You're supposed to do like a thing, like a response of some kind to that. Like I did the rising voice and then I said the thing and kind of snapped and double pointed at you.
You pointed.
Yeah, like there's.
And then, am I supposed to? Still don't know what you're looking
like
for.
You, there's just
like battleship noises,
or like the game. Like you could be like B-14, miss. You sunk my battleship. Like you could do something like that. You could listen. I feel like I'm pulling a lot of weight here tonight.
You feel wrong. Wrongly. You're incorrect.
Yes, but
miss.
Oh.
Oh. You see, because...
Right, because in Battleship, there's such as a grid.
Yes.
So Battleship is the classic game of guessing grid coordinates and until one of you blows up the entire enemy flotilla, which is actually how the United States Navy functions, it turns out.
It's shocking that it's effective at all, ever.
Well, yes.
There's a strong argument to be made, in fact, that they would be better off breaking the ocean up into a grid and just rolling dice for where they should fire rather than trying to guess.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's how it works.
You know, I don't think we should
warfare, man.
Modern warfare?
Warfare. You know, Worf
from Star Trek. He's got a...
Of Deep Space Nine fame.
He's got... Yeah, I think he's more famous for Next Generation, homie.
I figured that would make you like just a bit... Just upset enough to actually continue the conversation.
You guessed.
You know what'll make you real mad?
Oh, good.
I was looking through my Netflix queue yesterday, and Deep Space Nine, when you hover your little cursor thing over it, the thumbnail image is not a picture of Deep Space Nine. It's a picture of the Defiant. That's how mad does that make you?
That's stupid. Why?
It's so dumb.
That's not. It's the show is. It's. It's named after the space station.
Yep.
I was never like a huge Deep Space Nine fan. Like I like it, but I was never like, Deep Space Nine is my jam.
Yeah, I want to go back and watch it as an adult because I did not particularly enjoy it as a kid. Mm-hmm. But we watched it because Next Generation and Deep Space Nine were concurrent, and then there was a brief period where Deep Space Nine was the only Star Trek on TV, and then Deep Space Nine and Voyager, which I did like, were on it. You know, they overlapped. And so we would watch Star Trek as a family on Sunday nights because that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would watch it and it was on and it was fine. But it was not my favorite Star Trek.
I did always like Avery Brooks as Commander Sisko. Like he was
excellent.
He was excellent in that role. Like he could monologue with him and Patrick Stewart could monologue like nobody's business.
Yeah. What's the name? Rene Auberjonois. I can't say French words, but Odo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know him, I see him in other things, and I'm like, oh, Odo's in this. But actually, like, he's also a respected actor.
Mm-hmm.
Just, he was in that also. So that's neat, I guess.
I always liked Colm Meaney.
Oh, I like him. He should be in just things. I like him in things. And, sci-fi things in general.
And Alexander Siddig from Dr. Bashir. Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, he's good.
He popped up in a show my wife and I watched recently, and I was like, oh, it's that guy. That's good. I'm glad he's...
I always thought of him as like kind of small and meek from in Deep Space Nine, but then they put him in other things. Like he's huge.
Is he?
He's
like
a tall, kind of muscular man. He's been in because when they put him in other things, he's always like a terrorist.
Oh yeah,
because you know he's Middle Eastern.
Sure,
and they make him very threatening looking. But like he was in that what was that movie about the Crusades? Like in the
Kingdom of Heaven?
Yeah, I think that one.
With Orlando Bloom and Liam Neeson?
Yeah, it was not an interesting movie. I remember very little about it, except that he was in it and like huge and menacing.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, wait, but he's small and meek and he was some kind of weird genius clone.
In the show Elise and I watched, Elise is my wife for those who don't know her, he was a artist and like he was a pretty meek type of guy there.
Yeah. So I guess what we're saying is that he's he can do at least two roles.
Yeah.
He's an actor.
Yeah, I like him. He's a good guy. I would watch a show that was just, a half hour, an hour or so of Patrick Stewart and Avery Brooks just monologuing at one each other.
Oh, yeah.
I guess that's a dialogue, but...
I guess.
I'd watch it.
But the thing, the reason I'm interested to go back and watch Deep Space Nine other than just because I want more Star Trek in my life, is that apparently it's actually quite good, and it is one of the earliest shows, at least primetime television shows, to do story arcs that span seasons, mm-hmm. or at least parts of seasons, rather than just the typical Star Trek one-off episodes, which might have a thread running through them, but really, they're still episodic.
Yeah, at most, it's going to be a two-parter.
Yeah. DS9 did a lot of, like, the entire season was the story arc, and little things happened within it, but really, we were watching what happened in the war with the Dominion, or whatever. So, I'm interested to see it. Interested to see it again as an adult who can appreciate those things. Mm-hmm. So Star Trek, why did we start talking about this?
We were talking about Battleship.
Battleship. Let's just go back to that. That's the thing.
We don't need to follow the train of thought back to how we got
The train
there.
Was long and broken and confusing.
And it wasn't actually a train at all. It was
a space train, which was a good episode of Doctor Who.
There we go. Can I commit a cardinal sin of nerddom here?
Sure. I might punch you.
I don't really like watching Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
Like I like Doctor Who. I like reading summaries of it and reading like the big picture stuff. But I'm like, I don't want to watch an episode of Doctor Who.
Oh, interesting.
Ever. It's like comic books in that way.
Huh.
And I think the main reason it is because I am one of those people who found David Tennant a letdown after Chris Eccleston.
Oh, I don't know what I would say a letdown, but mm-hmm. I liked Eccleston a lot.
I really enjoyed his Doctor. Like David Tennant was just so, I was like, I don't, but he's not Chris Eccleston.
Yeah.
I want that Doctor back.
Goodbye, anyway, half of our listener base.
Right. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I like Doctor Who a lot. I was mm-hmm. disappointed by Matt Smith, and then I still don't know how I feel about the current guy, mm-hmm. but it's interesting that you feel that way because you're the only reason I ever gave Doctor Who a second chance.
Really?
Because it was one of those shows that people kept telling me to, it was like, Sherlock, mm-hmm. which maybe is fine. I don't care and never will.
Sure.
Because the people who keep telling me to watch it are so weird and tumblery about it mm-hmm. that I will never, ever be able to care.
Right.
And I was on the hairy edge of just being like, this is stupid. And I'd seen episodes of it, but with people who were just like curled up in a ball with weird, unpleasant glee about the fact that they were watching Doctor Who. And I was just mm-hmm. like, you're wrong and you should feel bad. And the fact that you had invited me several times to watch it with some other people mm-hmm. is the only reason I gave it, really the only reason I gave it another chance. Mm-hmm. And now I really enjoy it. I like it quite a bit.
Yeah, like I watched about maybe 2.5-3 seasons of it with a friend of mine, and I think it was the Harpy, actually. And I'm like, that's fine. Like, I don't feel like I need to continue this train. I feel like it hits the same beats.
Yeah.
Over and over, which might be something you could say about Star Trek, too.
Sure.
And it might just be that I don't want to watch Doctor Who because I didn't watch it as a young person who could have that be their big sci-fi thing.
Uh-huh.
Which might be the case. Let's talk about Battleship.
Okay.
Unless you want to keep going here. That's fine.
Just a quick point. A reason both probably for many people to dislike Doctor Who. Maybe I'll ruin Doctor Who for some people. I don't have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And a reason to like it, I guess, if you feel like you want to look at it this way. Something I enjoy about Doctor Who is that he's straight up Jesus and, like, unapologetically, maybe not even intentionally, mm-hmm. but unavoidably on a regular basis, but not so much that it's like, so I love Superman, but I understand mm-hmm. that people don't like Superman because he's a Boy Scout and he's indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. That's why I like Superman. I've said it before. Like, I don't care about Spider-Man and Batman and their personal problems because mm-hmm. I encounter personal problems all the time, every day. Those are things. If I wanted to deal with personal problems, I would just live my life and I wouldn't escape mm-hmm. into fiction. So those things don't interest me. But a thing that doesn't exist is an indestructible, flying, laser-eyed man who can fix all the problems. And that's why Superman is interesting. Mm-hmm. And so in a similar, if a little more nuanced vein, Doctor Who, in most, if not all of his iterations, tends to hit those buttons. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
that makes sense.
I like Doctor Who,
and I could totally see Doctor Who the Doctor beating some dudes with a whip and flipping tables. So, you know,
right? Why not?
I could see that happening.
So, speaking of sci-fi, Battleship apparently had a really unbelievably terrible movie with a sci-fi bent. I didn't even bother to see it because there's no way it could possibly be good.
It didn't look good at all to me.
Though, to be fair, a space alien theme on the Battleship game,
that'd be cool,
could briefly revitalize sales. And maybe it did. Maybe that was what happened.
It could very well be. Apparently the ending of that movie involved reactivating one of the World War II era battleships at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
And having it fight the aliens because it was unaffected by their technology or whatever.
Because it didn't use any modern computer guided whatever.
Yeah. Sure. And then, but then they didn't, the modern Navy guys didn't know how to operate it. So they had to get like
all the old timey World War II sailors,
which is an entertaining.
I'll watch that scene.
Yeah.
It's probably on YouTube.
It probably is. The movie might be on Netflix. Anyway. So Battleship.
It's a game.
The classic game of guessing where, you know, you guess the coordinates. It's Battleship. You know how to play Battleship. Everyone knows how to play. Don't front.
There's it. Is it 1 through 10?
I think so, yeah. And A through the 10th letter of the alphabet.
W.
So, I guess, like, Battleship's fine and all. Like, you go back and forth guessing, and you can figure out what the statistically optimal pattern to move your shooting is.
Right.
So what would you change? Well, I guess I'll make you go first. What would you change about Battleship to make it fun?
Easy. Let the ships move. Ships can move.
That's a good point.
Just let them move.
Let the ships move about.
Like, the greatest cheat in the game, because the whole game is you don't know what one another's boards are, and it's literally a guessing game.
Uh-huh.
Is once you hit a ship once, you know where... You have 1 in 4 chance, 1 in 3, 1 in 4. You have a 1 in 4 chance of hitting it again after the first hit, and it can't move. So you're gonna get there eventually. If it could move like a boat actually can, the game becomes a little more interesting. Like, it's a real gamble now. Mm-hmm. It's more tracking. You know, it gets fiddly, but we live in a world where it's not all that expensive to have app integration. So. Just
right.
Now play it on your phone, and if I move my ship back...
Well, yeah, but now you're talking about a video game, not a board game.
Right, but are we locked into board games forever on this?
No, not necessarily.
Because so, all right, when we were in elementary school, Talking Battleship came out. That was a huge deal. So already, this was a game with... It was still a physical board game that had a computerized... chip built into it that tracked where your ships were. So all you had to do was put the peg in, and it told you if you hit or missed and why. It's not much more logic to add to that circuit the ability to track the ships when you've moved them, because all it needs to do is see where the two pegs are, and it knows what the ships are by their length, and it knows what their location is by where you put them.
Sure.
So it's a board game again,
except with a little bit of app integration in it.
We're going back to Talking Battleship. It's got a little, like, an Arduino processor in it.
Uh-huh.
And maybe it costs $50 instead of the 16 cents worth of plastic that it's made out of.
Sure. Okay.
We don't have to go that way. If automation's not the fun way to do it, then
no,
we don't have
I mean,
to.
I guess automation might be the best way to do it, like, mechanically, but it's not the way that produces the best conversation for remaking the game.
Well, we can talk about... a different way of doing it if you have another idea, or a more mechanical way of making ship movement work.
I completely agree that ship movement is the way to go. Like, the ability to redeploy your fleet is absolutely the thing that would make Battleship interesting again.
Yeah. Before we get too far into our ideas, a side note, one of the things the company I work for does to try to keep things in sales, like, interesting and semi-competitive. They basically try to gamify sales. They do different games. They had a Mario-themed one, and I don't even know how that worked, but the last couple winters, they've done a Battleship game, and they have other people who are not on the sales team, like me, make Battleship boards, and I was trying to find a strategy for ship placement, and it turns out there isn't one. And there are a couple different, probably many, but there's stuff available online from different, college math students and game theory and whatever they're studying, who have created these tools to try to create the optimal battleship strategy, both for ship placement. So it'll try to help you do ship placement, but it turns out basically a randomizer is your best guess. And there are a few things like don't put your ships in the corners, but other than that, it's pretty much outright random. Nothing matters. And then your guess, and it'll be like, okay, I guessed here and it was a miss, and it changes the color of the squares around it depending on if it was a hit or a miss to tell you the probability of a hit around it. And so you can, if you wanted to cheat by running a little piece of software on the side while you play Battleship, you could slightly increase your chances.
Sure.
But really, the game is completely random.
Mm-hmm.
And so the game, there is no game in the game
mm-hmm.
at all. It's completely random. It's all guesswork from placement on. Cool. I guess that's the point I'm making.
Okay, that's fair.
So if you can move your ships legally.
Right.
Not just like A4. Let me think here. A4, totally not moving my battleship out of the way. Miss.
Miss, it's a miss.
You missed, dummy.
So what I would do,
uh-huh.
if it were me, I would introduce different, more colors of pegs to indicate more different types of actions your fleet might do. So you don't just have to shoot blindly.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't think real navies just start bombarding huge areas of the sea hoping for the best.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I would introduce things like radar and, like, spotter planes and stuff that you could use. And then you could mark your board with different colored pegs to demonstrate your degree of certainty about what you've seen.
Okay.
So, like, if I... like I this would take some development to do. Like, but suppose I send a spotter plane over your fleet, right?
Mm-hmm.
I might be able to say the spotter plane checks row 3.
Uh-huh.
And you have to tell me anything in row 3 at that point. And I can mark it with, say, a green peg. And that tells me that as of when I marked that, there was something in that row.
Sure.
Then you might be moving your... Then, like, say, maybe you get one movement per turn. You could take one ship and move it one space or rotate it. Say, something like that. So I know... So the older those green pegs get, the less confident I can be about what was there.
See, that's hard to track. Because say you run your spotter fleet or plane
mm-hmm.
3 turns in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Are you swapping those pegs? You're thinking video gamey. Mm-hmm. Are those pegs... Are you swapping them out for slightly darker green pegs until you run out of the darkest green and now they're gone? Uh-huh. Or are you just trying to keep track of which peg is the most recent in your brain? What are you doing to maintain, however, you know, an older peg is less accurate? What are you doing to maintain in your mind or on paper or whatever, what peg was placed when?
I guess a way you could do it is to have 3 green pegs, say, like 3 different colors, shades of green.
Uh-huh.
And you place them in a sequence, dark to light.
Uh-huh.
And when you finish place, if you want to use another one, you would then pull the darkest and use it again. So that way, you kind of know.
It's a little fiddly, but it works okay. You basically have to know what you started with. So you'd have to have some sort of thing that's like, on this turn, you're using this color green peg.
Mm-hmm.
I like it okay. It needs some work.
Sure.
On the same similar line, you could also say you can only send out planes if your carrier is still in operation.
Mm-hmm.
Or even you could even break it down a little further and say, like, you can send fleets of, you know, basically, if your spotter plane finds a ship and mm-hmm. your carrier is still operating fully, hasn't been hit, you can send out a squadron and take out that ship.
Mm-hmm.
But once your carrier takes a certain amount of damage, now you can't send out as many fighters, and then you can't send anything, and then maybe now mm-hmm. you can only send out spotter planes.
So there's...
Versus you can't, you know, you can't launch missiles or torpedoes or whatever if you don't have your
mm-hmm.
your submarine or your destroyer or whatever. And they can do different things, and so your ability to attack also becomes limited as different of your own ships are damaged or taken out.
So your turn becomes less I do one thing and more I pick a ship to act with, and the ship can do certain things.
Well, I don't see a reason why you couldn't act with multiple of them
mm-hmm.
necessarily, but yeah, you would probably need more than one action on a turn. Like mm-hmm. maybe there's a movement phase. And then, you know, a certain number of ships can act or whatever. You know, it gets fiddly fast, again, without... And that's probably why the game has remained as, like, needlessly simple, almost. It's just, like, unplayably, not really a game just guessing
mm-hmm.
simple as it's been for so long, that at some point it becomes either way too many things to track or necessitates an app or a processor of some sort or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But... Yeah.
Hmm.
I'm sure with enough testing and time, you could find a good middle ground, which is like, you can move this number of ships, or you have this many actions and you can split them up however. Like, okay, I'm going to move the carrier because it needs to go. Mm-hmm. I'm going to risk leaving the submarine where it is because I want to fire an ICBM,
right,
whatever it is that I have.
I think too, you would want a mechanic where once a ship is hit, so it emits a smoke plume, you know, because it
makes it a little easier to see.
Yeah, and like then the if the enemy player moves that ship, they have to update you on where its where the new location of the damaged space is.
Uh-huh.
So it might have rotated. You don't know that, but you know that space moved.
Sure. Yeah.
If it rotated, that space wouldn't move. Well, it might if it was one under the other.
Depends on where.
Yeah. But they have to keep you updated of where damaged spaces are.
Right.
That way, there is still some benefit to hitting a target.
Uh-huh.
I like to, we're kind of on the subject of like the carrier has certain powers or uh-huh. whatnot. I like the idea of like maybe the battleship has the power to hit multiple spaces at once with a barrage.
Uh-huh.
Like if it gets its bombardment going, it can go like, I target A3, A4, and A5.
Right.
And then you might sink a whole ship because like battleships are cool. They do a lot of damage.
Well, you could change up the ship styles, and they don't all have to necessarily be different. So, you know, it could be like, you just have to have any ship still in operation to do typical battleship style mm-hmm. guess and fire, you know, once per turn hits.
Right.
But then, you know, if you want to scan, you need a certain amount of the carrier in play. If mm-hmm. you want to, like, maybe you can't, maybe there's a point at which you no longer have a ship that can drop depth charges. I don't know that that's actually all that difficult a thing to do, but maybe at some point you don't have a ship that can take out the sub anymore. Mm-hmm. And maybe you're like, well, even though you both have ships in play, you can't take out his, so you lose. The game is over. It's checkmate. Mm-hmm. And so you could, but it doesn't have to be everything. So every single ship doesn't necessarily have to have its own special power, because mm-hmm. I forget what all the ships are. There's a battleship, there's a destroyer, there's a
PT boat.
Yeah. Is it actually though?
Battleship, destroyer, sub, PT boat, carrier.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. At any rate, things and stuff. I've lost track.
They don't all have to have a special power.
Yeah.
Yeah. They might also have some special powers that reveal their location too.
Yes.
Like if you launch a missile, they might be able to track the smoke plume back to where it came from and know, and then you've got to reveal the location of where one of the spots on that ship.
Yeah. Maybe.
So I guess the thing it seems like we would do, the thing we wholeheartedly agree on is you've got to be able to move your ships.
Uh-huh.
Like that's more interesting.
Yes. Agreed.
And the other, and then the ships, there needs to be more to do than just guess.
Yeah.
You need some way to get information. What do you think about putting it on a hex grid instead of a square grid?
I think that would necessitate the additional powers mm-hmm. and may require a greater limit on movement.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the game drags on forever. Also, it kind of hurts. Do you need an additional axis?
No.
For a hex grid?
No, it's not quite as obvious, but you can still just count.
No, because they're... it would be harder to do.
You just need to count from one end.
They would just jump back and forth. So you would have to have an axis that kind of wiggles back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It could be interesting. I don't know how much it would actually make a difference.
Sure.
It would slow your movement, I guess, at the end of the day.
I vaguely remember having, as a kid, a Star Wars battleship that I think was a hex grid.
But oh, yeah?
I don't remember if it actually was, or if it made a difference or not. But I was also a child, so.
Right.
Was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Legally, you're not anymore.
That's all that matters.
So so there's an interesting debate with current battleship over whether, well, I guess it's not a debate all that much with current battleships. So the value of the carrier versus, I don't think it's actually called a PT boat,
sure,
the smallest one, the two block one.
Mm-hmm.
And the argument is that which one's actually more valuable, because the carrier is the hardest to destroy because it's the biggest. But once you know it's the carrier, or once you're pretty sure it's the carrier anyway,
mm-hmm.
it's gone, especially if you can't move it. The PT boat's the easiest one to destroy, but it's tiny, and so it's also the easiest one to hide.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that difference actually becomes greater if you add the ability to move ships and, mm-hmm. and different powers and stuff. And so you got to, I guess you could just try to balance that and say, hey, the carrier is going to last for longer. it can do more things, but it loses them as it gets damaged more, but still like the slightly weaker or maybe even considerably weaker, smaller ship can move around and hide itself. And even if it takes one hit, is small enough that it can continue running around doing some damage for a while.
Right.
So, yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. Well, for one thing, since it's so simplistic, I mean, you'd think other than licensed battleship games like Star Wars Battleship, you would have seen other things using a similar mechanic if it were possible to even use that mechanic without getting sued into oblivion.
Right.
But potentially, it could make for some intriguing games, approaches to new games, if you were to do those sorts of things. You're hearing me playing with my glass over
gotcha.
Here. Tom looks really confused about something, like when a cat hears a noise but doesn't know what that noise is, and also is stupid and has red hair and no one loves it.
If you're stupid and have red hair and no one loves you, join my support group. We meet weeknights at...
Not on Fridays, because that's when we record the podcast, and I'm clearly here being mean to you. You don't want to bring other people into that,
no,
do
that
you?
Would be bad. That would be unpleasant.
Anyway, you could let us know somewhere. Whatever. On Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
On email at mildlyalarmingshoo@gmail.com.
On website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow.
Or just slap the nearest person.
With a fish.
Yeah, and you'll know.
Just do it. It's find fine. A fish, slap them.
Slap.
We'll be right back.
After these messages.
After these messages, we're going to get sued for using this jingle.
Ding!
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by Two Men Brand Leopard Cleaner. When your leopard is covered in mud or fungus, or just a huge pot of lamb chowder, it takes two men to get his pelt clean and shiny again. Two Men's patented formula penetrates deep into the leopard, removing dirt and grime while leaving the spots untouched. Watch as we apply Two Men to salsa here, working up a rich, creamy lather.
I'm United States astronaut Vic Chafterley, and I'm here to tell you that this will make your leopard shiny clean.
Listen, Vic, I know you're trying to help, but you just have to let other people do their own commercials. You'll get a chance to do your own thing, so just, you know, go back to your trailer and wait your turn, okay, buddy?
I'm United States astronaut Vic Chafterley, and I'm here to tell you that I'm trying to be more considerate.
We know, Vic, and we appreciate it.
Welcome back. The Mildly Alarming Podcast. We're whispering because Johannes is asleep and we're about to dip his hand into a bowl of warm water, causing him to pee himself.
Who is we?
Hey, buddy.
Hey.
I see you woke up.
Uh-huh.
You want to just do a segment maybe now?
Yeah.
You feeling up for it? All right, cool.
Why are my pants wet?
Glad to have you here. Welcome back to the show. I'm Tom Rich.
I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And we're here with another segment of Wrong About Books.
And moist pants. Damp. They're pretty much just wet. They're wet pants.
Just very wet pants. It smells like a pool in here for some reason.
Oh, I pee pure chlorine.
That explains gas. A lot.
Chlorine gas.
Oh, man. I knew a fellow once who accidentally who was high at work and mixed the wrong chemicals and mustard gassed himself.
Serves him right.
Right there in the back of a Burger King.
It's probably not mustard gas.
Well, whatever he did, it was...
Maybe chlorine.
But whatever it was, it caused his eyes to sting and burn as he staggered high into the darkness of the night and realized maybe I should make different choices in life.
Yeah.
And then I think he continued making those choices.
Yeah. Sounds like... the sort of person that you knew in college.
Yeah, it's fair. Has the theme music for Wrong About Books played yet?
No, because we haven't said Wrong About Books yet.
Wrong About Books. Wrong About Books, 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 Books.
Okay. It's probably played now.
Okay, here.
You have problems. Brain problems.
Yeah.
So we're doing a Wrong About Books.
Yep.
About a book.
Today's book that we're wrong about is, or maybe right about, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's we who are wrong or we're correcting people who are wrong.
It's unclear.
That's meant most things about the podcast are. But today's book is Nimona by Noelle Stevenson.
Nimona was a waitress. It's not true. There's a song called Ramona Was a Waitress that probably no one knows.
That's an amazing reference. Thank you for making it.
You're welcome. That's what I'm here for.
So Nimona is a graphic novel that started out as a webcomic and is now in book form. So you can read the whole thing on paper instead of having to use your screen to do it, about a shapeshifter named Nimona.
You spoiled the surprise from the first, like, maybe the third page of the book.
I think it's on the back of the book.
Everything will be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got a, yeah. And she decides she wants to be the sidekick of the arch-villain Ballister Blackcloak. Blackheart.
Come on.
His heart is black, not his cloak. His cloak is kind of a purpley red color.
Let the record show that Tom read this book yesterday, maybe today.
Yesterday.
And I read it months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow Tom is the one who can't remember the main character's name.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
They're opposed by Sir Ambrosius Goldenloin.
Yes.
Of the Institute.
The Institute.
And he is the hero, Blackheart is the villain, and Nimona is Blackheart's sidekick. And there's...
Not to be confused with protagonist and antagonist, though.
Right.
Because Blackheart is really kind of the protagonist.
He does take center stage for much of the book. And yeah, so that's kind of the setup. They get into some scrapes. There's a plot that goes on.
Did you say the author's name?
I think I did, but I'll say it again. Noel Stevenson.
Yes.
So I guess what we usually do with Wrong About Books, once we've given a quick summary there, is we do a spoiler-free up or down, kind of like, if that sounded cool to you, if that summary we gave was your jam, do we think your time would be well spent on this book?
Yeah.
So if that summary was your jam, do you think people's time would be well spent on Nimona?
Absolutely. I enjoyed it. It has sort of a, the art and the writing have a somewhat Hark a Vagrant feel to them, where they're kind of like scribbly doodly, not all that great looking, but at moments when impressive artistry is necessary, suddenly it looks beautiful. It's it's well done and it's well written, and I enjoyed it. And if you like the sort of thing we just described briefly, then you will like this book.
Yeah, I agree. It's a lot of fun. It's the characters are very engaging. I enjoyed spending time with them. I'm like, I like that guy. I'll hang out with him for a bit.
Yep.
And I'm bad at visual stuff generally, like the art. I'm not a great judge of color or design or any of that stuff, but I found the art fun. Like, I enjoyed looking at it. And it certainly it certainly rises to the occasion when it really needs to look really cool. I couldn't tell you if it's great art or not, but it impressed me.
Yeah, that's probably about where... Really, anyone critiquing art should probably give that as a preface, I feel. But yeah, I'm in the same camp.
Yeah, I just don't know enough about to talk intelligently about the art, other than to say I found it good.
It looked nice.
Yeah. So yeah, you will enjoy Nimona if you thought our summary was good.
Briefly, before we get to the spoilery part, I stumbled across this. I'd probably seen bits and pieces of it online. I read far fewer webcomics than I did in days of yore, but I still do enjoy a comic on the web now and again.
Mm-hmm.
And I may have seen a little bit of this, but I discovered the book when my wife gave it to me for Christmas. She apparently has an idea of the sort of things that I like.
Mm-hmm.
So I got this and I was like, that looks neat. And then I didn't read it for almost a year. And then when I did read it, I read it all at once, very quickly, and enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah.
And then have since made two or three other people read it.
I read about 40 pages in the morning before work one day, and then got home and immediately polished it off in a second sitting. So it definitely grabs hold of you.
Yep.
And it's a pretty quick read, too. So, quick stinger for a moment, and then we'll come back with spoilers, and then if you don't want to hear spoilers, stop listening for a little while.
So we're going to put probably some, like, moose mating noises?
Yeah.
If I can find those?
Yeah, just two
but
moose.
It'll be some kind of animal mating noises.
Moose, just two moose just going to town.
But we're
going to
shoot for moose.
Just producing offspring.
And then once they're done with that, we'll start spoiling the book.
You know, the male moose's orgasm is the third most dangerous thing in Canada.
Is the second most dangerous poutine?
Yes.
All right, we'll be right back after these mooses.
The most dangerous is Justin Trudeau.
That's some good moosin'. Disgusting.
Yes.
So now let's spoil the book.
Yeah, let's ruin the book for everybody. We're going to spoil it. Yes, we're going to talk spoilers here. Do you want to go first? Do you want me to?
Yes, my favorite part of the book happens in the first, like, maybe 4 or 5 pages.
Oh, good. What was your
which
favorite
isn't
part
to say that it is not good after that, but my very favorite part of the book, which is how I have sold it to everyone, I think, but you. I may have showed it to you, but pretty much everyone that I've showed it to is she shows up just like randomly. Nimona shows up. We're kind of following for maybe a couple panels, Ballister Blackheart, and then Nimona shows up and she's like, I want to be your henchman. And he's like, I don't need a henchman. Leave me alone. Where did you even come from? Go away. And she's like, no, but I want to be your henchman. And this goes on for a little bit. And then she's like, oh, by the way, did I mention I'm a shapeshifter? And then she turns into a shark, but she's still standing upright like a person. And also the shark has boobs. And I laughed at that for probably 10 minutes. The rest of the book is also good.
There's a lot of great little humor like that. Like, Nimona's got a very entertaining personality. She's very spunky and funny and fun to be around, you know, as a character. My favorite part, the thing that jumped out at me, was a scene late in the book where, or later, maybe it was the middle, I don't know. There was some part where she busts in to rescue Blackheart during a fight, and she smashes through the wall as a freaking ankylosaurus.
Oh, that's right.
And then for the rest of
that was awesome.
For the rest of the fight, proceeds to turn into various dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And it was just fantastic. It was great.
Yep.
I really enjoyed, too, like, the setting that the author put together here. It's this weird mix of fantasy and sci-fi.
Yeah.
And occasionally, like, 40s pulp.
Yeah.
That just... It the way it felt to me, and I don't know if this was the writing, the process that led to this, was that Noel Stevenson just sort of goes along and goes, okay, at this point I need them communicators, you know, like little wireless communicators for the point I'm doing. I'm just going to have those and not worry about it. At this point, a computer would be handy for my characters to have. I'm just going to have that and go for it. Magic works here. Cool. Sorcery. And it never, like... It feels like it should feel like she's cheating and just getting away with stuff, but it never did.
Well, the original conceit, too, is like a supervillain who already is more powerful and smarter than most, and then a bafflingly naturally powerful shape-shifting entity.
Mm-hmm.
So set them wherever you want.
Yeah.
I don't know how much thought was even put into it, because you got to remember this was written like page by page as a webcomic. But yeah, it never really pulls you out of it. So when they're talking to, you know, they go into town or they're talking to a villager or whatever, they're like the typical dopey fantasy medieval villager selling tomatoes from a wooden stand in the town square. But like the institute's this technologically advanced, watching everything on cameras and computers. You know, secret research, evil organization, and Ballister Blackheart is building like robots and weapons and crap. And yeah, it's very like anachronistic in a way that never feels like, wait, but why is that there? It makes sense. Mm-hmm. You're just like, yeah, nope, that makes sense.
And I think
I'm fine with that.
I think part of that is that the plot rolls along at such a quick speed and keeps you so grabbed on that you don't really have time or desire to pause and think through any questions you might have about the setting.
Yeah.
You just sort of, you're like, okay, we're just going to go with it. It's kind of fun.
Yep.
I liked it too in that way to wax a little more philosophical about that, because there's a lot of push in fantasy that you hear about online and in discussions about it, like to have well thought out systems and world building and, you know, here's how your magic works, and to lay it out almost like an RPG source book. And I felt like this was a very different approach that still worked very effectively.
Yeah.
You can still just have something that, no, if you were to sit down and lay out the parts, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense, but just go with me here. That's not what we're doing. That's not the kind of thing we're making here. And I really enjoyed that as a break from systemic fantasy, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, well, on a somewhat related note, I guess, you tend to see that kind of freedom in anachronism and just mixing genres more often in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
and this is, certainly has a comedic bent, but I felt like the author did a very good job of having fairly regular ha-ha, laugh-out-loud funny moments, slapstick and snarky jokes, mm-hmm. And even, you know, modern references that maybe it doesn't make any sense for the characters in the world to know. It didn't really take you out of it. But at the same time, she was able to make fairly poignant, like, draw the reader in a way that they felt for the characters. They mm-hmm. they were, if something emotional was happening, you cared. You weren't like, oh, why is this happening in my silly slapstick, mm-hmm. funny, ha-ha comic? It worked. Like, she developed a rapport between the characters, but also what is the word that I keep failing to find?
I'm not finding it
either. I've used
it
like 10 times today. Empathy. Thank you. Me.
Glad to help.
an empathy for the characters without breaking the funny, and was able to be funny without pulling you out of caring about the characters.
Right, right.
It was well done.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely felt very, like the particular thing that jumped, I enjoyed the relation between Nimona and Blackheart. Like, they're sort of, he's kind of, her enthusiasm for being a sidekick and for villainry.
Not just a sidekick, but a henchman. Your violence and destruction.
And his, like, he's clear, he, like, his whole thing is he's not really a villain. Like, he's just sort of playing that role.
Yeah, he's kind of pushed into it, which is discussed in the story. Yeah. But yeah, he's somewhat similar. Hopefully this doesn't turn too many people off to it. I would say even if it does, give it a chance, because that's not exactly... But similar to Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, in that it's a very relatable protagonist who is the bad guy, but kind of a reluctant bad guy.
Wait, do people not like Dr. Horrible?
Yeah, there are those people. Oh, they're out there.
I didn't even know. And I really, I enjoyed his like exasperation as she tries to push their schemes in ever more destructive manners. And it's just,
yeah, you'd be like, wait, no, we're just trying to steal the thing. Not we don't have to kill people. Stop killing people.
Or they're when they watch the movie and they're arguing, like, he's like, that would never happen. She's like, just watch the movie. That was funny.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a lot of great little character beats like that that go in there. And I really enjoyed too the relationship between Blackheart and Goldenloin. Like,
yeah,
that was very well developed. Did you read at the end of the book the Christmas special comic?
I read everything in the book. I don't recall that. So there, yes. Yeah.
Where it's this little one-off.
I didn't get anything in my stocking, that thing.
Yeah.
And
it's Goldenloin and Blackheart at like an orphanage together. And Blackheart is kind of taking care of Goldenloin and the other people are picking on him. And it's very sweet.
Yeah.
You know, it was very, almost, it was touching, I guess is how I put it.
Yeah. So it's well worth the read. The story is actually, the story arc is fairly interesting. If it wouldn't have held your interest over months and years as a webcomic, in probably under an hour. Well, for an average reader, what do you think?
I would say an hour or so, probably.
An hour-ish to read the whole book. You're not gonna feel like you've wasted the time, even if you don't love it as much as we did.
Mm-hmm.
It'll get you there. It's funny. It's fun. It's interesting. You feel feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So, A plus.
So if you're soulless and dead inside, perhaps Nimona will revive your capacity to have emotion.
Yeah. And if it doesn't, maybe you should cryogenically freeze yourself, and in 1,000 years when you wake up again, maybe the technology will exist to make you a real human.
A real boy again. Like Pinocchio.
Isn't that a type of pasta?
I think it's what happens when there is an earthquake.
Uh-huh.
And it sort of finishes, but then at a later time again.
I don't think that's right.
Oh. Sometimes I don't know what things are.
So you can find this thing called Nimona. I asked Tom to hand me the book and then I didn't bother to look because I was talking. I was hoping to find the website.
We'll put it in the show notes.
It's
too.
Put out by Harper. And apparently there's just no website. You can't find this anymore. It's gone forever. If you would like to borrow my copy, you'll have to contact us on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can contact us by you can contact us by email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
It's the only one. Oh, you can post in the comments at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. And since we're clearly so good at what we do, you should also leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play Music. You can also listen to us, but I don't know if you can rate us or not, but you can try, and you should, even if you can't. Just keep trying. Try forever on TuneIn Radio.
Or you can take the shape of a boot and be on my foot and, you know, just go about my day with me a little bit. And then at the end of the day, take back your own shape and ask me your question then.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yep. See you next week.
Okay, bye.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by Agnes Crinklehorn's Practice Children.
I'm Agnes Crinklehorn, and I have had 38 children in my lifetime. Many people ask me how I raised them all to be good members of society, except for Jeremy, who is a vagrant. The answer is that I struck them about the neck and head with a belt when they were naughty. But if you and your spouse are planning to bless your marriage with the union of seed and womb, and are concerned that suffragettes will judge you for engaging in corporal punishment, you can try to prepare yourself with Agnes Crinklehorn's Practice Children. Each practice child can be yours for a small monthly fee and will live in your house. They do not speak the Lord's English, but rather their own language of howls and yaps. Also, they walk on all fours as toddlers do. You do not need to provide blankets as they are covered in soft hair, but they do require your care and attention. And loose women will not shout at you if you strike them in the snout with a rolled-up constable's quarterly. Agnes Crinklehorn's Practice Children will allow you to hone your skills as a parent. Rent or buy one today.